call this 1,393rd meeting of the Board of Directors to order. I would ask for a motion for the approval of the agenda. Motion made. Motion made and seconded. Any discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
As opposed. I would ask for a motion for the approval of the minutes of the meeting of January 23rd. Motion made and second. Any discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
As opposed. Thank you. We have a significant list for public comment. I would remind everyone of the both the time limitations for testimony and to remind the speakers that the box over here will show green through the majority of your time. You get a yellow caution, and you get a red light as your time has expired and a beeping sound, and it is, I would encourage everybody to try and stay within the time limits because we have a number of people to testify, and in fairness to everyone, we hope that you can stick to the time limits. We could start, I would ask for Anthony Newman to give his testimony.
Good morning. If you can hear me? Great. My name is Anthony Newman. I'm a peer support counselor coordinator at the DC Center for Independent Living. Let me just tell you how my morning went so far. I had a doctor's appointment this morning, called Metro Access a couple of days ago, made the appointment. The driver gets there, and I go out back, go down my ramp. He's standing at the van. Putting the lift down, and I get all the way to the van. He doesn't say anything. I get on the lift, and I say, well, I guess I should do it. Good morning. How are you? Good morning. But why you say it like that? What do you mean why I say it like that? At least I said good morning. I would have thought you would have said good morning to me first. That was the beginning, I guess, of my ordeal. Go to the hospital, to my appointment. I decide I'm going to catch the shuttle to Brooklyn, and I can catch the train to get here. I whip and run and rush, and I get to Brooklyn, get all the way downstairs to the mezzanine, and the elevator's broke. Wow, here we go. Have to go back upstairs, catch the shuttle bus, go to another station, then catch the train. That happens all the time. You get to a subway station, you plan on going somewhere, you're excited. You get there, the elevator doesn't work. I have a lot of people that come to the support group that I coordinate. A lot of these folks are on disability. This means that they don't have a lot of money. For most of them, this is a social outing that they look forward to coming to every week. However, by the third or fourth week of the month, they can't come to the support group because they don't have any money. A lot of these folks come across town to come to the support group. That's a $7 each way fee. I beg you not to raise prices anymore for Metro Access, as far as Metro Access goes, because a lot of people depend on your service, and a lot of people just can't afford to pay anymore. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Amber Keohane, and Amber is followed by Shalit Gorham? Shalita Gorham? So first is Amber and then Shalita.
Boy, my name is Amber Boyd. I hate to be the living person. I have to see the maybe I also use the tractor. And as Steve said before, it's hard for people to use the tractor to because the prices are higher. They are people in those people with disabilities to be active and then community. So how can they be active if they can't go anywhere because for one thing the service is in order. And for another, it's so hard. And a lot of times they can't afford to do when they need to go, let alone when they want. So that's all I have.
Thank you. Shalita?
Good morning, everyone. My name is Shalita. And I'm a frequent user of Metro Access. I currently work for the DC Center for Independent Living as well as the 1020 College. So I take, within a minimum of one day, I take about 4, maybe 5 trips. And for these last 2 weeks alone, I've experienced a number of problems. I've been told they've been outside and then left. It's one day when it was like raining and off and on throughout the day, and I've been waiting on my pickup window. And been outside and haven't seen the driver. I've been left at school for more than 2 hours. And I think as a person with a disability and as an advocate for people with disabilities, this is something we should not have to do where we're paying out of our own pocket when most of us are on fixed income and can't afford the prices that are given to us within the minimum of $7. It just seems too much, especially for someone like myself. Takes a minimum of 5 trips within a 1 week period or more. And it's just difficult because I stand up and I have a lot of other health issues that are brought on by just the weather itself. When I'm standing outside for 25 minutes to an hour waiting on transportation, I feel like that's something a person should not have to do, especially not get left when I call multiple times, check with dispatch, ask them, where's my ride? I don't see my ride. They say my ride's been outside for 20 minutes. When I've been outside for about 25 minutes and on the phone with the dispatcher for 10, I just don't get it. A lot of the rules and regulations that are set in place, I really don't understand because it doesn't seem like the way they're set up to operate is really functional for a person with a disability. It just really, honestly, is terrible for anyone with a disability to go through physical transportation services. That is currently all I have to say, and thank you for your time.
Thank you. next is Heidi Case, followed by Thelma Green.
Good morning, and thank you.
Good morning.
My name is Heidi Case. I am a member of the AAC. I was really appreciative of the very in-depth and robust discussion on Metro Access fares that I was able to witness this morning, and I'd like to share a couple of my thoughts and perspectives on some of what you were brought up. On the issue of the predictability of fares, one of the high points besides the affordability of 2 times the bus-only fare being the new formula is that it's absolutely predictable. It's simple. There's no distance factors. It is as close to a flat fare, which is the ultimate predictability, as it can be in still maintaining ADA compliance. Another fact that I think was sorely left out from the brochures and all the information at public hearings, though there is a 3% to 4% increase on rail, that bus increase to 185 is 15%. Your own Title VI information shows the impact that particularly focuses on minorities and low-income riders. Then you take the fact that 70% of all Metro access fares include bus. That's a minimum of a 50-cent increase for people who are not already paying $7, which is 25%, or the 5% who pay the jurisdictional bus fares, like if the trip starts and ends in PG County and you get their bus. Everybody else is impacted because it's a door-to-door service, and trains, people don't live at train stations. So bus fare will be included. The last issue is that you are all that stand in a government institution. You get more federal tax dollars, but the only accountability factor, the only thing that stands between the riders and the use of those tax dollars is you. There aren't voters like there are in government who can hold their decision makers accountable. There are council members in D.C. that can hold. There is only you. We are counting on you to do the right thing. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next is Elma Green, followed by Doris Ray.
My concern is also against the raising of the fare, but also I have problems with drivers pushing a ride-on button and saying they outside. Some of them say they outside. You go outside, they not outside. And it is too cold for people to be running around from one end of their building to another because Metro Access is not outside. Then you get on the phone and call dispatch. They take forever to get answer the phone sometimes. And then when they answer, some of them, a few of them is nice enough to stay on the phone with you until the driver get there. Some of them will tell you, well, ma'am, the driver is so-and-so. The driver's way down there by my rental office or way down there to another church or in my parking lot. Or not there at all. Then after I get off the phone, 3 minutes later, they pulling up. Or either they can't find me. Something needed to be done better. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next is Doris Ray.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the WMATA board. My name is Doris Gray, and I'm here to represent the Independent Center of Northern Virginia and reiterate our testimony, which you have in writing the Arlington hearing, that we are opposed to increases in fixed route fares at this time and as well as Metro access fare. On the fixed route side, we feel that service changes and eliminations that have resulted in subdividing of routes, particularly in Northern Virginia and perhaps I believe in the Maryland suburbs and other places, results in people having to take two buses or three buses or more, or two buses and a subway trip to get to the same place. That's a de facto fairness. We think that you should take this into account in terms of not only cost burden for low and moderate income people with disabilities and all riders who are low and moderate income, but also that you should take it into account in terms of the burden of the fixed route user having to be outside waiting for transfers to bus attack. It is a reduction. Additionally, we associate ourselves with the testament of the AAC. I must say I'm an AAC member, but I'm speaking for the Independent Center of Northern Virginia and our disability community in Northern Virginia. We ask you to look at the first option that was presented to you of using bus-to-bus fare as the comparison for fares on metro access. If this is something you cannot decide this year, we ask you, because we think you can do it, to change the policy for this year and not raise metro access fares until a decision has been made about what is fair and equitable. We also ask on the Title VI side that there be an analysis done of the disability community, because the current analysis does not take into account a large number of low-income people living on fixed incomes or underemployed people with disabilities in our community, and the economic impact of raising fares in all modes that is occurring. Thank you very much. The opportunity to speak, I was unable to come to the food hearing, so I
thank you. Thank you. Next is Lee Thomas. I'm sorry, I can't read. Jung? Meg?
This is L. Thomas.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Let's see. L is for my first name. I don't really go by that. Anyway, with Metro Access, the fare is already confusing as it is. Like, sometimes I catch a ride going to the same place 2 days in a row or 3 days in a row at the same time and leave there at the same time. And the fare will be different. And, like, somebody told me it's, one time that was based upon them not having enough Metro Access drivers that day because more people was riding on the service, so that affected the fare. And then, like, when a lot of times when the drivers say they're at my point, they're not even there. I'm already outside waiting for them, and they're not even there at all. And see, and like for me, my street, it's another street that's about the same name in Northwest. And like, they come to my area telling me that they're there, but they're in Northwest. I live in Northeast. And then they will argue with me a lot of times, the dispatcher. Well, the driver's there. One time I had to get at them and say, hey, the driver's not here. I'm not blind. I asked my neighbors, do you see anybody? They said no. So the service is still have to get some improvements on the service. And you got to realize the 5-minute rule that y'all talk about, that's not really a 5-minute rule, because, like, if we depend on the phone call, like 2 or 3 minutes don't pass by the time we get the phone call. So you got to put that in an account. And please don't waste the fare, because we already straining as it is to pay what y'all are looking for us to pay, what have you. And you got to have a set time price, because before, when you going from Maryland to D.C. or back, that's the only time you pay $7. Now you could run a paying $7 going from D.C. to D.C. That don't make no sense. When did y'all change that, or what have you? So please do better on getting us picked up. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That concludes the listing of individuals who... Did you sign up, Michael? You know the time limits, right? Okay.
Bottom line is, a lot of people come to don't want to sales off. I echo the landfill growing up.
Thank you. We also have a individual who signed up late, Marissa Laus.
Hi, my name is Marissa. I'm a consumer of my drug. I'm from Northern Virginia, which is people that have disabilities and their family. I'm begging you to please consider lowering the multiplier and making it so that people with disabilities can still afford Metroaxis to get around. Because for me, I use Metroaxis to get everywhere I need to get to serve my community and myself. And without it, we won't be able to do anything. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for coming every meeting. That concludes the public hearing process for public testimony. I would call on Mr. Sheehan for the report from the AAC.
Very good. Thank you very much. I appreciate being here and being able to talk to the board with respect to the position of the AAC and relative to the fares that we have for Metro Access. I think you've seen today and you've heard in the testimony here, and particularly I think in the testimony that you've received during the hearings, that there's a lot of concern about the fares for Metro Access. What you have here for individuals with disabilities is their only way to get around, and it deals with quality of life issues. What the AAC has presented to you this week and what you've heard in testimonies are three alternatives that we have for lowering the fares that will meet ADA requirements, assist individuals with disabilities to be able to take Metro Access trips and be fair to the system. We understand that the three alternatives, we have a bus only alternative where you're taking twice the bus fare and calculating that out as an easy fare to be able to, so that individuals can understand what the fare is going to be and that the that fare can be used for Metro Access trips. We also, as a second option, have an option where you can reduce the multiplier so that it's not twice the fixed fare, but some consideration of the multiplier, either 1.75, 1.5, or 1.25. And the third option is to take and reduce from $7 to $6.50, the high end, which is closer to the rail and the bus options that we see out there right now. We've looked at these numbers. We've had discussions with WMATA staff. We've presented this, I think, to members of the board. We feel that it's fair, it's equitable, and that it will assist people with disabilities to be able to continue using the Metro Access system. I don't think I can be any more eloquent than a lot of the people that have been here today and the people that were at the hearings that said, you know, this is their lifeline, this is how they need to move forward, and this is important to them and important to the AAC. I appreciate the fact that you've listened to us at the hearings. I know that you'll do some number crunching. If there are any questions, our committee stands ready to answer those questions and give you whatever additional information we can provide so that you can make the best decision possible. On the other projects that we're working on, particularly the lighting project and the bus stop project, you'll be getting more reports for those projects, updates on those projects in the future. We appreciate your support. Thank you. Are there any questions from me?
Any questions or comments for Neil? Thank you very much.
Very good.
Appreciate
Thank
it.
You. Okay.
Next is the – I'm sorry.
Yeah, one thing you hear it very good. That, that there's not a little bit over by number of problems. Do need to separate lower fares.
Thank you. Next, the Writers Advisory Council, Carol Walker.
Good morning.
Good morning. Morning.
I just want to take a little bit of time to say a preamble. Yesterday was a great day for Metro. And I say that because it was a great day that the CEOs of three jurisdictions understood that they needed to make more than a token payment to invest in Metro's future. That's just great news. Just to hit the highlights of what the Writers Advisory Council has been up to since our last meeting, BRAC members were present at each of the six hearings. And we have formed a budget committee, and we plan to present recommendations at, by the March 13th meeting of the Finance and Administration Committee. We've also, at our next meeting, planned to develop a 2014 work plan and talk about orientation of members. And finally, I wanted to thank the board for the opportunity to speak before the Incident Communications panel for the Safety and Security Committee. And there are recommendations from the RAC attached to that. And I would just, again, like to commend the board for the quality of appointees that we have on the RAC Advisory Council, such as their enthusiasm that a proposal that I made to not have an August meeting went down to a rousing defeat.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, just a question regarding Ms. Walker's recommendation from their committee to the budget. Can we ensure that as their committee provides that information, that it goes to the general manager and staff for review so that we have it? I wouldn't want it to come to us and then come back for us to make some sort of recommendation when the analysis might be, if there's analysis needed, might be.
Right, and I really should say that they've already been working. Okay. The budget committee has been working with the staff, OMB, on projections and things like that, funnel through our staff board. So we will definitely be sending a copy.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Any other questions?
Next item is the chairman's remarks. I was, on behalf of all of the board, I want to say I think we were all immensely relieved and deeply appreciative of the work that had gone on before the meeting with the staff, in particular the general manager's participation in the meeting between the two governors and the mayor, that led to the joint commitment of Maryland, Virginia, and the district for $25 million from each jurisdiction to fund the first year, in effect, of Momentum. It is the first funding, lest we lose sight of it in the push and pull, it is the first actual funding commitments made to 2025. It is an incredibly important threshold, and we can't express enough gratitude to both governors and the mayor about this commitment. It will open a pathway that I think can be grasped in time for the significant challenges about the next capital year. There's an issue, and I know it may seem a personal irritant, but I have seen in three different media stories that there are no costs attributable to the delay in the opening of Phase 1. But there may not be contractor or MWA costs incurred in the delay. The delay in lost revenues forecast for the authority is between $2.8 and $3 million per month of delay. And I would remind everybody that we are fully staffed for the operation of Phase 1. We did so particularly with long lead time training for train operators, station managers, track and safety, and police officers to staff that. Those expenses are on our books every month and they're without the offset of the anticipated revenue. So, lest anybody think there are no costs involved in this, we're incurring the cost. And we know it's a natural part of this process, but there needs to be some recognition of the potential impact on the operating budget for this year and perhaps even into next year. I also wanted to express my appreciation for the work that the Finance Committee has been doing and working with the staff over the preparation and the Q&As on the fiscal year 15 budget. There are an awful lot of questions on the table and a lot of options, and I think we are potentially on time to be able to adopt a operating budget in March next month at the board meeting. The investments that we make about a state of good repair are also something that none of us want to lose sight of, because those are ongoing commitments. They're ongoing capital projects. They're critical importance about operational integrity and safety. And while we're focusing on the next year's worth of momentum, it's important to remember that it was only about 36 months ago that we were still in the middle of a very deep hole. And now the authority has closed out 21 of the 29 NTSB recommendations. Employee injuries have declined for three consecutive years, and reliability is better. Trains are running at 92% on time, and escalators are near an all-time high of 93% availability. The issue beyond this first $75 million are enormous, and while it's important to take time to celebrate the actions that just took place yesterday, it is important to acknowledge and to stay focused from the standpoint of what it takes to meet the commitments about our CAR options, which are which expire in July and August of next year, and require, if we are going to exercise those options, it requires that we have a capital funding agreement in place before we have the financial commitment that allows us to fund the CARs and the option. And then we have to have the serious jurisdiction discussions about the ability and the mechanisms that the jurisdictions want to exercise to be able to pay for those CARs. These are options for 220 additional rail cars. They're about $2.8 million per car. The time frame for making this, somebody said, "What you mean we have to start right away?" And I said, "No, I think we needed to start 3 months ago." But it's this important threshold is passed, at least mostly passed, about the funding for 15. The two tranche CAR options for next year have a price tag of $616 million alone. That's just the CAR options. That's nothing else. I don't care how you divide it. That's about $200+ million per jurisdiction for next year's budget. That's an extraordinary lift. And if we're going to make it about funding those CARs, that process, both about the CFA and the funding options, those discussions have to start now, and I want to dedicate this board, in particular, the 2025 special committee, to be a point for the negotiations around the capital funding agreement and the beginning of the discussions around how the jurisdictions might get to paying for this. Failure to exercise these options would mean that we don't have a 2025 plan. We have a 2030 plan at best. Procurement to replace these lost options would probably take 4 to 5 years worth of work and approvals. The price will be much higher, I'm convinced, and the product may not be as compatible as we would like about the existing new cars coming online. As I said, the stakes are incredibly high. I know we can surmount the difficulties both about the CFA and this capital payment, the mix between pay-as-you-go, long-term debt, other financing options. Before we come to the point where the decision will be forced to be foregone. Anyway, I'm optimistic. So with that,
I'm so glad to hear that.
I am. And with that, I would recognize the general manager for the general manager's comments.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you, Chairman Downs, for sharing the news about this important capital commitment. And I will just add that having sat there yesterday with the governors and the mayor and the secretaries of transportation, I am optimistic that we will move forward to find the right funding plan to support Metro 2025. I think I was really encouraged by the commitment yesterday, and I'm looking forward to dealing with that with your help in the coming months. In talking about the meeting yesterday, they were very complimentary of the improvements made in the first 3 years of the Metro Ford rebuilding plan and of the emphasis being placed on safety. These comments are a reflection of our employees' hard work and commitment to strengthening Metro, and I accept their compliments on behalf of our board and our employees. As you heard at the Finance Committee meeting this morning, the public comment period for this year's budget and fare adjustments closed on February 11th. I want to take a moment to thank our riders for participating in the hearings, the online survey, the pop-up events, and the meetings with community organizations to give us their feedback. I attended 5 of the 6 hearings, which provide an excellent opportunity to hear directly from the public about their experiences using our system. And I want to thank our customers to know that we heard them and we take notes on their comments and review any service issues that are raised, in addition to considering their comments on fare policy. The budget and fares outreach effort illustrated Metro's enhanced approach to increasing dialogue with our customers, including those riders who have been underrepresented historically, such as residents with limited English proficiency, minorities, and people in lower-income households, as well as seniors and customers with disabilities. Just like the D.C. region as a whole, Metro serves a very diverse population. Our riders speak languages ranging from Spanish and Chinese to Amharic, a language spoken by Ethiopian immigrants. So we know that placing an ad in the newspaper isn't sufficient to get the level of participation we are seeking. That's why we're in the process of developing a framework that will be used going forward whenever Metro seeks public input on significant issues. This public participation plan is a new federal regulatory requirement for the Title VI program, but here at Metro, we also see it as an opportunity to build two-way communication with our customers. A big theme for our effort is meeting people where they are rather than expecting them to come to us. Last week, we launched the Speak Up at Your Ride public outreach campaign. We developed a survey to collect information about how we can make it easier for riders to speak with us and for us to reach them. I encourage all of our riders to take the survey by visiting WMATA.com/speakup. Metro staff will also conduct numerous outreach events throughout the D.C. metro region to gather feedback. We'll be holding pop-up events at rail stations and bus stops, meeting people at festivals, sporting events, and at the places where they shop or go about their daily activities. We're going where our riders are not asking them to come to us. This past Saturday, our staff was in Prince George's County at the African American Family Day, and just 2 days ago on Tuesday, Metro staff visited Gallaudet University to gather feedback from students and the hearing impaired community. At all these events, Metro staff and contractors hand out information to educate the public and encourage input. And they carry computer tablets that allow individuals to fill out the survey on site. This public outreach is one part of the larger effort to create Metro's public participation plan. I'm pleased to announce that riders are now able to use smart benefits to purchase transit passes. In the past, smart benefits were loaded onto a rider's smart trip card and the balance could be used to pay for individual trips on our system. But we kept hearing from riders that they want to use their commuter benefits to purchase bus and rail passes too. In response to these requests, we launched a pilot program and we are now rolling out the upgrade for all smart benefits users. Metro Rail's unlimited 28-day pass for $230 and the regional 7-day bus pass available for $16 are two of the 12 passes that commuters now have the option to purchase with their smart benefits. If you commute to work twice a day, 5 days a week, and then use Metro on the weekends too, these passes can save you money. So beginning this month, employers have the option to assign some or all of their employees' commuter benefits as transit pass benefits. And on March 1st, those benefits will show up in smart benefits accounts for the first time. And commuters can use the funds to purchase passes. The change has been made to our system, so now it's up to the employers to opt in and designate the new benefit for their workers. I encourage employers to take advantage of this upgrade so that Metro riders have options when it comes to using their commuter benefits on our system. Finally, spring is around the corner, folks. I'd like to update the board on our plans to take a break from track work this spring, as we do every year, for the cherry blossom season. Despite the return of cold weather this week, the first day of spring is just 3 weeks away on March 20th, the same day that National Cherry Blossom Festival kicks off. Metro Rail will begin four consecutive weekends free of track work on Saturday, March 22nd, continuing through Sunday, April 13th. Every year, Metro Rail ridership spikes when crowds of visitors flock to the area to see the cherry blossoms and enjoy springtime in our region. On Saturdays during the Cherry Blossom Festival, Metro Rail ridership increases by more than 60% during midday and afternoon peak periods. And stations closest to the tidal basin, Federal Triangle, Smithsonian, L'Enfant Plaza, see as much as three times the normal Saturday traffic. Visitors who come to town for the blossoms often stop by the zoo or catch a Nationals game, so increased ridership is spread throughout the system. I encourage everyone who uses the system during cherry blossom season to anticipate crowds and take additional caution. Stand back from the platform edge, move into the car and away from the doors when boarding a train, and stand to the right on escalators. Regular Metro riders may want to build extra time into their daily commutes and consider using L'Enfant Plaza, Archives, Federal Triangle, or Metro Center as an alternative to the Smithsonian Station, which is our busiest station during Cherry Blossom Festival. Visitors should plan ahead by purchasing a Smart Trip card or one-day pass and familiarize themselves with the Metro Rail system before they arrive. The spring is a beautiful time of year to enjoy the nation's capital, and we want to ensure that Metro is available and accessible to everyone. That concludes my remarks.
Thank you. A lot of good news. Next is the annual review of the key performance indicators. Andrea?
Okay. Thank you very much. Good afternoon, Chairman Downs and members of the board. I'm happy to be here today to continue our approach from last year. I think it was at your request, Mr. Downs, to talk about our annual performance results in front of the full board. And the Customer Service and Operations Committee has continued to hear the quarterly results. This year, we're stepping it up a little bit, and I hope you'll enjoy the presentation that we're about to show up on the screen here. What we're doing this time is putting the performance results and business plan accomplishments of the year in context of a customer experience. So it's a bit of a different look at it, not just a bunch of percentages and numbers, but really what people see as they travel through our system. And as I've said before, our key performance indicators don't specifically measure one individual's experience on the system. They show really a large amount of aggregated data from millions of hours of service, but they do allow the board and the public to track how we're doing over the longer period of time, whether we're making progress. And I can speak, for example, about rail on-time performance from my own personal point of view. We achieved a 92% for the year of rail on-time performance. I ride the system about 8 hours a week, the red line and the orange line, and I experience disruptions on occasion, and my experience is not 92%. But for the most part, throughout the year, I know what time I need to leave my house, I know what time I need to arrive at the station, and I know what time I need to be at work, and I get here for the most part on time. I think you would agree, Barbara. I can't say the same about the couple of occasions I decide to drive off frequently. That's kind of an unknown destination time. Now, sometimes we do have high-profile incidents, and they all combine in one to make one bad month, and everyone knows that November was a bad month for us. And in fact, even though the KPIs aggregate a large amount of data, you can see the impacts of those high-profile events. So if you look at the red line in November, the overall average for the year was 91.2%, but the red line's performance in that bad month of November fell to 87%. That's a pretty significant drop, and that's a result of those incidents that we have. And we do talk about those incidents and how they impact our high-level KPIs and vital signs and how we're addressing those failures. So with that, I'd like to turn to our brief 5-minute presentation, and which is called KPIs in Practice, A Year in Life of the Metro Customer.
Our bus customer is ready for work. She checks the Next Bus app and Metro alerts on her smartphone and heads out the door. Due to Metro Bus's improved on-time performance, up 4.5% since 2010, she's a little more confident that the bus will be there within her expectations. Sometimes the schedule changes have been frustrating, but buses don't seem to come early as much. She probably didn't know that Metro's bus planning team has been working to make the bus schedules more reliable. The cleanliness of the bus stop where she waits matters to her, and she takes note of how well it's maintained. The bus arrives. Our customer boards and is greeted by the operator who has completed the We Care customer service training program. Our customer uses her smart trip card to pay the fare, maybe reloads it, and then takes a seat. Her ride is smooth and pleasant due to Metro's investment in new buses and their care. She didn't know this, but buses are traveling on average more than 1,000 miles further without breaking down than just 3 years ago. She arrives at her destination and is careful to avoid slipping as she steps to the curb. She'd seen some of the safety messages and knows to be aware of her surroundings when boarding and alighting buses. She probably doesn't know what Metrobus is doing to reduce customer injuries by reducing collisions. Her customer arrives at her destination and goes on with her day. Or perhaps she may transfer to the Metro Rail system to get to her destination. Another customer may arrive at the rail station by car, vying for a parking space at one of the terminal stations. He may have to arrive early to get a choice parking spot, or maybe he noticed a few more spots available with new facilities opening at 2 stations, Dunloring and Twinbrook, in just the last year. He walks across the plaza and enters the station, grabbing an express, perhaps glancing at the kiosk display and the passenger information display to see when the next train is expected. As he heads for the escalator, he notices a customer using the elevator and is reminded that the availability of both escalators and elevators has been pretty good. Even though escalators are out of service sometimes, they seem to be repaired faster than in past years. The major repairs, due to Metro Forward investments in escalators and elevator replacements, are promised to yield better reliability, too. He's noticed the mezzanines are also brighter, making it a little easier to see inside the stations. Our customer boards the train when it arrives and travels toward downtown, most likely to one of the 3 transfer stations. He may notice the flow of passengers as trains arrive and depart. He may even notice the Metro Transit police officer walking through the station with his canine, or the station manager standing next to the fare gates answering questions. What he doesn't notice is the air conditioning or heating this time of year is working well. The platform is pretty clean, and the repair work seems to be progressing. There have been fewer delays, too. He remembers door delays are a fraction of what they were just last year due to rail car maintenance implementing a solution that dramatically improved their reliability. In fact, more than 92% of the time, Metro Rail delivers him to his destination within just a few minutes of what he's come to expect. Metro seems to be communicating better, too. Now, when incidents do occur, Metro alerts are sent to his smartphone telling him what kind of delay it is so he can make better decisions about getting where he's going. He doesn't always make the trip faster, but he does feel better about knowing what's happening. He boards another train to finish his commute, checking his iPhone and thinking about the day ahead. As he exits the system, he checks the balance on his SmartTrip card to see if it reflects the auto-load feature that he signed up for a few months ago. Our Metro Access customer uses the new fare calculator to make sure he knows his fare when he schedules his ride. This tool gives him assurance that he's paying the lowest fare for his trip. A Metro Access vehicle is scheduled to pick him up between 8 and 8:30. He's confident his driver will be there within that time and knows that even though there have been some challenges in the past, the Metro Access staff do their best to help get him to his destination. In fact, he barely noticed the new service structure that was put in place starting in July. Behind the scenes, Metro employees are working to make our customers' rides safer, smoother, and more comfortable. We invest millions of work hours to do just that. Safety is our first goal. As a result of our commitment to our safety culture, we've continually upgraded and improved the Roadway Worker Protection Program and created a close call program to report near-miss incidents. We've improved our safety reporting and investigation processes and are continually working to reduce injuries. We're implementing a fatigue risk management system to monitor high-risk groups and reduce the likelihood of working when overtired. We also have continued to seek ways to make the system safer for customers, to reduce slips and falls, and to get all of our customers to their destination safely. Most importantly, Metro continues to strive to provide good customer service and reliable transportation. By measuring our progress toward our strategic goals through the Vital Signs Report over the last 4 years, we can tell we are making a difference, and we're looking forward to Metro's next chapter.
And that concludes my presentation. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Very nicely done. Thank you. Questions? Comments? Nice change. Even watched it, right?
Yeah.
thank you. I know sometimes it's a struggle about getting the board's focused attention about the KPIs, but this is a helpful step. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's what it is, as Downey said, it's what it's all about. It's the specific performance that we can put on the street every day. So thank you again. next, we have a report from the Governance Committee, Mr. Dyke.
Unfortunately, I don't have a video to enlighten us yet, but next time. The following actions were referred to the board at the February 20th meeting of the Governance Committee. Approval of revisions to the board's governance documents. The committee moved to approve revisions to the board's bylaws and procedures. Proposed changes to the bylaws include additional language to clarify the function of the board's executive committee, and greater detail concerning when the Audits and Investigations Committee should meet to incorporate FTA best practices. Proposed changes to the procedures include a clear explanation of the board's dotted line relationship with the general counsel, incorporating FTA best practices in the appointment of members to the board's Audits and Investigations Committee, and consolidating language regarding ethics matters to the Code of Ethics. The Governance Committee will consider proposed revisions to the Code of Ethics in March. With that preliminary, I would like to move approval of the changes presented in your board diligent book.
Motion made. Second. Any discussion? Mr. Nichols?
Mr. Chair, yes, thank you. Just one brief comment, and that's to thank the committee for the work that they've done on this. These matters are exceptionally important, and as we build the infrastructure and the system, improve the mechanical infrastructure in our management, clearly it's critically important that the board, first and foremost, examine continuously its own standards of performance, how we operate, what we do, how we do it in terms of transparency and our own accountability. And that's a continuous improvement process as well. So thank you for the work that you've done, and look forward to consideration here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And as I said to the chair of the Governance Committee work is never done.
That's true. And now I have to make a video.
That concludes this part of the...
Can we get a vote?
Oh, I'm sorry. We have a motion and second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the recommendation to approve the governance committee's changes to the bylaws, all those,
aye.
All those opposed? Thank you. We have another item on the agenda, a consent item, but I would ask that the board adjourn for a session with the council over some legal issues that we need to hear about in the context of this. So if I could ask for a motion to temporarily adjourn.
Could we do,
oh, yes. I'm sorry. If you'd like to do that, the district has nothing to report. Virginia?
Mr. Chairman, might I delay you 2 other seconds because I think it's important, and you refer to it as the delay of a silver line, and because we are in the throes of a silver line, I just wanted to share that while we recognize that the delay is there, we recognize, too, that there is an exceeding amount of excitement going on, but more importantly, to refer to Fairfax County's preparation in receiving the silver line in the community. This represents doubling of the amount of Fairfax County station that are in the county, as well as the largest improvement I think Metro has had in a long time. In Fairfax County's role in preparing to receive the service, it's really important to recognize that we also will be experiencing a delay. But I think it's been interesting having been out in the community. People are still excited. The only problem about it is as you drive along, I would ask people, what does disappointment look like? It looks like a gleaming, shining new system ready to open. And we believe the opening is going to occur when it's reliable and safe. And we are prepared to do so. We will be implementing an excessive amount of new bus service. We're prepared with the new garage that we'll have. First in Fairfax County, a locked, safe bicycle racks where we expect people to be arriving at the Metro in every mode possible. And so we hear a lot of discussion about the delay. I don't want anyone to deter what the delay means to us, but I think all of us prepare, and we will continue on our preparedness just as they're doing on the other end. So. Just
recognize that Fairfax County has also made a number of revisions and additions to its bus service, awaiting
phase one. They are deployed, ready to be deployed throughout the community. So it's very much an
They're
important part.
They're also sentient coach.
That's right. Thank you.
Thank you. Maryland? Federal government?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. 2 things I would like to report. One, that by action of the General Services Administrator, the federal members of the board have been reappointed for various lengths of term, so we're here and legal. Happy with that. And secondly, I did want to bring attention to President Obama's announcement yesterday to be fulfilled in his budget request, but a preview of the vision for federal transportation legislation, 4-year bill, $300 billion over the 4 years, a viable means of funding proposed, and within that, a 70% increase in public transit funding. So where it'll come out, we'll all see over the next several months, but it's a great starting point for that discussion.
And that concludes the jurisdiction reports. I would then ask for a motion to temporarily adjourn. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed. We'll return at the completion of the executive session. Thank you.
You'll read. Yes. Chairman, I move that the board certify to the best of each member's knowledge and with no individual member dissenting that at today's board executive sessions, this morning and this afternoon, and the board executive session of February 20th, 2014, only such matters as are authorized for discussion in executive session under board bylaws Article 10, and only those matters identified in the notice by which the executive sessions were convened were heard, discussed, or considered by the board.
Motion made and seconded.
You weren't here on the 20th. Okay. We'll divide the motion for the 20th.
Okay. First is the 20th.
Any objection on the 20th?
Hearing
For today, the 27th.
All in favor signify by
saying
aye.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay.
And for the session today, the 27th.
Both of them.
Both of them.
Motion made and seconded. Any objections? Hearing none, the motion is approved. Thank you. Aye. Without
no
objection.
Individual member dissenting.
Right. We have an item that was initially listed as a consent item, and I would entertain a motion to remove the item from the consent calendar. Motion made and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Thank you. For discussion.
So we're moving it from consent calendar to the
regular calendar. So for presentation, Ms. Kissel.
Thank you. This item before the board is to do two things. It is to renew the line of credit that WMATA uses on an annual basis as part of the budget adoption. And it's also to increase the line of credit to a capacity to increase it by another $100 million. And I'll address the latter part first. Typically, it is very common practice for WMATA during the budget year to adopt a line of credit for liquidity purposes. The grant application process, where WMATA utilizes a majority of funds for the capital program, is an 8 to 9 month cycle time, and the liquidity facility actually helped bridge us to an expenditure spending program until we get those grants. Last year, or the year before, we had a line of credit facility at a $200 million level. In order to be prudent with respect to the line capacity, because it actually has financing fees attributed to it and usage fees, we reduced the line in last year's budget, the budget year that we're in here currently, for FY14, to $150 million. As a result of not only the application process of our federal grants, which PREA and the formula funds, which are somewhat delayed in terms of getting approval by the FTA, but we suspect that we will have approval by April. In addition to some prior older year grants where we have not quite drawn and we are in the process of doing that, we are recommending to the board to increase the capacity for the line to give us the ability to draw on those on the line prior to the draw of the federal grants, which will happen in April, May, and June. So the anticipation by the end of the year is that we will have all federal fiscal year 2013 grants approved in place as appropriated and drawn down matching the expenditures that we've made for this year's spending. So that is what you have before you. We took the opportunity to also include in the resolution the renewal of the annual line of credit that we would typically do during the budget process. In my view, I think it's a best practice to renew your line credit a little bit off cycle of your budget adoption. And so we took the opportunity today to actually renew the line for FY15 year, and that's also in the resolution that you see. So I'll take any questions if you have.
Any questions, Mr. Nichols?
I'm sorry.
Thank you, Ms. Kissel. Just one question was, and that's the cost of funds on the borrowing side. Is there a budget impact that's already been programmed in terms of a cost in terms of operating side?
Yes, we have the cost. Actually, we have the cost of borrowing since it mostly supports our capital program
and some capital side.
In the capital side, and it's much less than what we had planned for.
even with the additional capacity that we're requesting, we would still be on budget or not under budget.
Okay, thank you. That's the only question I had.
Yeah, Mr. Kissel, in the balance of the year at least, can you keep a running report to us on the progress in drawing down the federal grants?
Yes, we can. I have provided that in the monthly January report, but I will be more, we can do an additional report on what those draws are and paybacks.
Any other questions? A motion to approve? Motion made and seconded to approve. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Thank you. Motion approved. Meeting adjourned. Bang.